I'm of the opinion that I don't care how much engagement I get because of the thing that we just talked about. Just because you don't see it doesn't mean that it's not happening, doesn't mean that I'm not playing the long game. And if I do a good job of doing what I'm supposed to do, the new business will ultimately happen because I'm vocalizing that story. I can share it with clients. We are our own media companies in person, online, and wherever else in the world. And so being able to articulate that type of content is valuable. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
This is another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. My guest today is Zach Miller, the infamous Zach Miller from Zach Miller Says, podcast host, author, and entrepreneur. Zach, thanks for being my guest today.
Thank you. What the word infamous, like how do you define that? Because, you know, sometimes people like define it in a negative way and sometimes it's in a positive way. Which way are we swinging today
on that? I think infamous is usually good, unless you're a criminal or a sociopath. Mm. Or
yes.
So as long as you're doing good things, then that infamy matters. I think infamy is really around people know you, right?
Yes, but they could know you for bad things, but not today.
Exactly, right. Which is a topic near and dear to your heart as the author of Anomaly we were talking about before. What is Anomaly?
Anomaly is a book that I wrote a few years ago. It launched in April of 2019. And it really is the crux of the question that I had gotten the majority of my business career. And that's some form of, hey, Zach, I want more attention. I want more people to come to my shop. I want more people to come to my website. And oh, by the way, not only do I want that, but I want to do it quicker, faster, cheaper, et cetera. How do I do that? And for some crazy reason, I've been able to do that myself. And so I took all the answers that I'd given in a plethora of different ways over the years and took a stab at writing 60,000 words, and somehow it actually got published.
60,000 words. How many pages is your book?
Let me pull it out of my backpack. So I think actually officially it finished at 54,000 after some round of edits, which, by the way, you've written a book, so you know what the editing process of a book, which you don't typically do yourself, you have someone else do it, right, is the most humiliating thing you can ever go through in the world. So the cover of this book is actually just leaked pen from the amount of edits from that person. No. So what is it? 185 pages.
Okay.
So I think that people have a tendency to try and copycat other people and try to copy exact strategies from people. And while I think that I understand why they do that, they don't understand that you have to, number one, say hello to people. You have to introduce yourself to people and they have to know who you are. But then even more important on that is how many ads do you think that you see every single day?
Oh, Jesus. That's a really good question. Let's talk about the normal person. What does a normal person see every day?
So the last time I've found an official stat was like 2012, 2013. It was 5,000 ads a day.
Wow, that is ridiculous.
So you got to think that it's double that now, but we'll just go with the old stat. So it's you, the brand, the business, the person, whatever, versus 4,999 other people each and every day.
Man, oh man. Yeah, that's kind of crazy when you think in those terms. And for me, you know, the idea behind Anomaly is really, you know, you're positioning it saying, look, you have to be your authentic self. So you have to be an anomaly in a sense that you're standing out with whatever's authentic to you, right? So mm-hmm. There's consistency. But do all of us have to be a media company? Because that's what it feels like. I feel like I have to pump out all this content and I'm not sure what happens to come back, or am I doing enough? Like, what's the answer there? Ads, obviously, but.
So I believe that because it's 2020, most of us can be a media company and should probably treat ourselves like a media company, but I don't think it has to be in kind of the traditional kind of way where it's just online, right? I think media is a way that people are consuming things. And so if we think of ourselves as a media company in all facets of life, or all facets of the business, I think that's something that can be very advantageous for us. And so I believe that there needs to be a collection or a cornucopia of kind of in-person and traditional and online things all mixed together. And while doing all those things in a ongoing and a repeating perspective, I think helps you be seen. And I think that if you just do an online ad, I don't think that's the only thing that's going to be successful. And so it's a mixture of, you know, doing online events, networking, events in person, networking, online stuff, online events all together to kind of showcase who you are as that brand or business, if you will. Because if you see someone, think about it, right? You do a lot of stuff online and then you see someone in person, you're like, we got to be that same person. Mm. You don't want to sell something different then just because you see that person online or in person. And I think a lot of people, they mix that and think that they can just do stuff online. I'm like, no. There's totally a mixture of all that stuff together. And figuring out how to do that and mix it is some of the things that we talk about in the book and I talk about in general.
So the work that you do lines up with that, and that you're working with companies to help get their brand out, or individuals? Like, who's the typical client that you're working with?
Most companies have done a mixture of getting decent revenues out there, but they want more people, right? And so I've seen even businesses that are doing, you know, $50-60 million a year and no one knows about them. And it's like, hey, like, how do you do that? And so they don't even know how to repeat the problem, if you will. And so it's like, okay, well, let's backtrack and figure out how did you get to there? And so kind of doubling down on some of that stuff. And but then there are smaller businesses the business that I'm in right now, like I started working with them and they were a traditional software company about 24 months ago. But they recognized that digital media was something that they were making a little bit of money on. And they saw that as kind of the next trajectory. And so they started doubling down on that, tripling down on that. And then so they're called Array Digital. They're based in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And when I started working with them, they had about $150,000 annually in digital marketing sales. Now they've scraped software completely off of their kind of style of business that they do.
Wow, really?
They scraped it completely. Okay. And now they've taken digital media, and I started working with them 18, 24 months ago, something like that. And they went from 150 to now I think they're doing 2.4 recurring revenue.
What? So when you say digital media, like where are they generating revenue?
So their clients are buying websites, social media, SEO.
Okay.
Google ads.
So like digital services, like
digital. Yeah. Like your digital service suite. Yeah. And so as a company in their world, they were good at stuff, but there was no real strategy, if you will, there was no like, hey, attention is really, really important. And I think a lot of people say, hey, I need to not only get your attention, but I need to get your business right now. And my whole concept is, that's great. Would love to get business from all those people right now. But there's a cycle and there's kind of a funnel, if you will, that it takes a little bit longer than you think to actually acquire that person. And if you put a strategy behind that, you can actually make, well, whatever the multiplier is of 150,000 to 2.4 million. Wow. I don't want to do that math, but it's a significant growth. And yeah. Their whole thing is to, in 11 years, so from 19 to 2030, is to go from the little bit that they were making to $100 million business. And so they document this whole process. Mm-hmm. And what's important in there is seeing it, they got to meet a lot of people. Right. And so as great as it is to, you know, see those revenues go up, they also have to look at it and say, we have to meet a lot of people mm-hmm. along the way. And so how can we do that so that people will like us and then ultimately buy from us as well? And so those are some of the things that we've worked on for the 18 to 24 months that we've been working together.
So this is a company that sells business to business, mm-hmm. which I always have a disconnect in my brain and I'm in that space. But so what, I'm just curious about the strategy that you employed with them. You say, you know, we have to meet a lot of people. What channels and what type of content did they put out, or what was the key to meeting more people and then converting them into a client?
So the thing that I can think about that was very good for them is that in our area, and this is everyone's going to be different, but in our area, I looked through and recognized that there wasn't basically a marketing or entrepreneur meetup that was ongoing on a regular recurring basis. I had run some of these style meetups in the past, but basically had sold them or gotten rid of them over the years. And so I told them, I was like, hey, like, there's no meetup going on right now in your space. Why don't you guys become the kings of that, basically? And then they started inviting their competition, their potential customers, and a plethora of other people. And that was one way that people just started immediately seeing them as more of the go-to company in that space. And so I think people have to be very cautious in, oh, so-and-so across. So if someone else was in our area and they're like, well, we're going to start a digital marketing meetup, I would say, look, is that the right next step to do? Or is there another space that you guys can capitalize on and jump on in? And so, you know, where do you live in what, LA? Where do you live?
Newport Beach, yeah.
Newport Beach. County. So how many marketing meetups are there around in that area? Is there one or two go-tos?
You know, it's funny. I don't know if there is a marketing one. There's definitely a technology one, and there's definitely... And
is the technology just like the one go-to? Or is there multiples?
Yeah, for me, there's really two. There's one that's a tech meetup, OC Tech. Mm-hmm. And there's another one that's straight up a networking type group.
So it's OC Tech, like Orange County Technology, so like technology in general, and you have a bunch of different software agencies and people that are interested all over the board. Right. So that whoever
the networking ones all over the map. So there's not one specific to marketing, right?
Right. So it could be whatever your industry is, plus meetup, whatever. And so I'm interested in like who is the main host of something like that? Right. What do they do?
You know, the one I don't know. I think they're a recruiting agency. The other one,
because they can go in there and find people.
Right, right. Which makes sense. Right? Like they can find people that need talent, and here's the talent.
It's weird because people are like, I don't want to do that. And I'm like, okay. Because someone will, and someone will win. I mean, you see how quickly it happened.
Right.
Right. I mean, basically, a nobody in that space was known for software, mm-hmm. right? Had close to 7 figures in revenue in software, I think, something like that. But basically, they're like, this isn't the industry that is going to move us to where we want to get. We have to do something different.
I find it really interesting. So very, they went from like digital to service-based, though. They found that was more lucrative.
Well, they were still, I mean, it was custom service, if you will.
Right.
Where this, I mean, it's, you could say that these things are more of a commodity, but I mean, there's still definitely custom aspects to it. But I would say it's service to service.
But it still takes people to do it.
Sure.
Yeah. As opposed to, I have a digital product. It scales according to how many servers or storage or.
Yeah, it's definitely men on street, girls on street that are doing the task. Yeah.
I almost feel like I want to go the other way. I want a digital product that'll scale, right? But which is challenging. But it sounded like, were they successful in the software space, or were they looking to change because of that?
I believe what happened with this specific company is they were looking at revenue profit per kind of industry or vertical. And they saw that they were trying to figure out how to do software recurring, and that was a difficult thing for them to figure out.
Yep.
And then they were looking through and they're like, oh, we're at, I don't know what, 3x on, and this is a guess, 3x of digital marketing, where our software side is, you know, 1.1x.
Right.
And they were like, this is interesting. Maybe we can do something here.
You know, it's funny because I think that the goal is to have that scalable software tool, but it's not that easy, is it? They probably found that reality that there's a lot of software out there now. There's a lot of software as a service. It's almost like the Netflix effect where it's like not another subscription. So they probably ran up against that a little bit. And
I almost think so.
Services are not, you know, that's interesting.
I love a good revenue, recurring revenue stream. I think everyone does, right? But I think you have to look at these things as cycles, right? And so are we at the end of this cycle? And while we might not be at the very end, I would say we've gone over the hill and are probably on the last part of the bell curve of that, where maybe recurring revenue isn't going to be the sexy beast for the, you know, for the ongoing future, and that people have to be thinking about that. And so it's challenging.
I think it is challenging. You're right. I think it's like we as entrepreneurs want it. Is that really what customers want? And I think that's what you said as well. Like there may be a tipping point where they don't, you know, they're trying to look at some other model that's not like, oh, another, another siphon on my bank account every month.
And what I recommend people to do is like, look at industries that have nothing to do with yours and see if there's something that's working that you can implement in yours. I think all too often, just because you hear a sexy buzzword doesn't mean that that is the thing that you should be looking at. Look at something from that someone else is using that you've never heard of. That could be a very lucrative opportunity for you. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, these guys at the time, you know, it was part digital media. So before they were doing like WordPress sites, okay. was that on one side of it. Yep. And then there was custom software. But then they just hire a bunch of digital media people.
Interesting.
So.
And it's probably the same customer.
I don't recall. I don't.
But anyways, not to focus on that. I find it interesting just because it's a case study.
But they're using a thing that I use to build up my kind of entrepreneurial
like your street
credibility, if you will. Yep. And the things that I used 10 years ago, I'm just reusing that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I have all this, a toolbox of opportunities that I can pull out of. And I was like, oh, let's do this one. This one worked.
That's really interesting you said that. So on this podcast will announce, no. I've been putting together a new group and it's called Founders Pack. And the mm-hmm. philosophy behind it is really, and we may have talked about some of this, is really a venue where...
Is this the Japanese?
The Koritsu model.
Yeah, right? Koritsu, yep.
And so the Founders Pack first event is March 18th in Orange County in Newport Beach, hosted by WeWork. We've got a really cool panelist that I'm going to announce, and then we'll add a couple more. But the idea is that, you know, it's a local group that people can show up, and what they're pitching, anybody can make a 1-minute pitch mm-hmm. of, you know, here's the business I'm in, problem I solve and how I solve it, but then this is what I need. And the idea being that it's not just, you know, casual networking, it's getting over that hump of, I need help with this. So that people know from the stage, this is what you need help with. And then maybe you can meet someone to be an ally or form an alliance around it.
And you're curating the people that are in there.
Exactly.
Which is very valuable. And then from a traditional or offline perspective out of that, something that that we talked about before from a meetup perspective, but like when you drive down the street and you see the office building, you see the name on the door or the name on the side of the building, that's valuable. That's basically what you're doing in this case where the building is the meetup mm-hmm. and Founders, what'd you say, Founders Pack?
Yep, Founders Pack.
Or Michael, you know, is the thing that is the name on the building, and that's valuable. And so it's the 2020 version of being able to do that. And I think that by curating and bringing people to you, there's this extra sense of credibility there that most people don't take advantage of. And so kudos for you for doing that, because I think it can be very valuable and you can capitalize on it and you can take pictures. And then you can use those pictures. And then, yeah. I mean, how many people want to see the picture of you and me just sitting in a random office all the time, right? They want to see other stuff and activity too. And so there's value in that.
Well, so it's interesting. It's very timely that you bring that up, because I think that there's that, you know, in-person connectivity that is really valuable, but I find a lot of meetups are kind of pointless. They're really a chance to go out and socialize with other work people, or you'll hear someone's talk and there's not necessarily action that comes out of it. Now, I can see to your point where if you're the guy leading the meetup, no matter what, you're positioning yourself. And then if you bring in potential clients or partners there, that's a win. So I think that's probably the guy that's winning, right? Is the guy running it.
to me, excuses and to me, bad execution are opportunities. Mm-hmm. Right. So if someone has done a bad job of being the host, if someone has done a bad job of just selling their meetup or bringing people together, that's an opportunity for me. And so good on you for sucking. Thanks. Like, I mean, but that's like people.
I feel like I need to go back and do more meetups. I need a marketing one. Well, I need a software one.
Your curation is so valuable. Right. People that are true curators and true networkers, if you will. That person can help someone else make a phenomenal amount of money. And and because of that connection ends up making you a ton of money because you are that connector of sorts. And so I believe it's very undervalued, But the problem is people just say, oh, it's a meetup. Oh, it's a thing where people are networking and throwing out business cards. And that's the last thing that I would want to do.
Right.
There has to be the right value in that.
An idea around it, which is not a random idea. It's you're coming here with this model and this is the benefit to you. Like, or this is what you get. Anybody can make a pitch, but this is how you got to structure it.
Well, if I recall, the Keiretsu model that we talked about before was, it's a model that really connects people that are looking to have problem solved with different industries, if you will. Right. And so you being the housing of that is super valuable for people.
We're going to find out.
Hey, and if it's not, well, then it's on you. There you go. Do it in Virginia.
We can partner up on one in Virginia.
Let's do it.
Actually, I know some people there. I know Joe Soto's there because I came in for his event there. And he's got
Joe Soto. I don't know him, but let's do it.
Well, Joe Soto, I met through Ty Lopez, one of his events. And it was a phenomenal. He has a program aimed at helping marketing agencies, you know, sell more and grow. And he did a great event there in Virginia. So I'll make that connection. But he, you know, what's interesting is one of the guys that was in his program is in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And he started an online local Facebook group. It was like a local business networking thing, and he's blowing up, and now he's trying to teach other people how to do it. So it's really interesting that you're saying that as well, because he's had a tremendous amount of success doing the same thing in the last like year.
Ultimately, the word is community. You just, you know, a community is a community, right? So whether that's an in-person group, a Facebook group, I mean, yeah. Facebook is.
I think he's doing live events too, by the way.
Live events, but I mean, it's a valuable thing. I mean, think about it. Even Facebook is doing Facebook group commercials on TV now. So clearly that means it's something that's valuable to them.
That's a good spending. Point. I didn't think of that. It's like there's a group for, and I think the future of Facebook is around two things. It's groups and Messenger, right? So their strategy, and a lot of guys left over this, the WhatsApp guys left Facebook, I think, over this, is to make Messenger more secure and private. And instead of you being in this general homogenized thing where we blast ads at you, is to get into the groups that are around your interests,
right? And then you sell the ad to the group.
I think that's their strategy, which is to do more commerce. So they want, I think what they're thinking is, and it's a risk, right? Because their model is all around ads and the feed, but that's caused other problems, and they've been fined $5 billion by Congress, whether it's right or not.
But I think it's so interesting. So over the summer, I did an Ironman, the triathlon race.
That's all.
And
congratulations. How was it? I did not. I've never
done one of those. Here's where, like, obviously it was hard, but like,
yeah,
you do a lot of training so that the race isn't that hard. But there's two brands in there that I can think of that I believe are just main sponsors of the race. And so one of them is a shoe company, Hoka One One, a company I never heard of before. And then a sunglass company called Roka, which is, I think one of them is based, it doesn't matter where they're based. My point is this, is that I'm now attached to this group. This group is Ironman, and I love the community that is Ironman, the triathlon community. And because those organizations and the shoe company, Hoka One One, and the sunglass company, Roka, are recognized that the type of athlete that they're looking for does the Ironman, they're able to advertise towards that. And because I love Ironman, I start to learn about this other thing. And then I've actually bought both of them.
Interesting. Right?
And I've learned that people that the content that I'll consume of these like super athletes, they both use them. So like, it's all about finding the right fit instead of just throwing money at something. And I think people don't.
That's interesting.
They're not thinking right. They're thinking, oh, well, how can I get the masses to see this thing, when it's like, well, how can you get the right person to see this thing? Right. And there's just way more value in that, in my opinion. And I love both of the products now, and I didn't know anything about them, you know, 9 months ago. So it's a very interesting strategy behind those companies, and a strategy that I don't think most people act on, if you will.
That's really interesting. So, I don't know if this is where we originally wanted the conversation to go, but I find it really interesting because, number one, you know, Facebook's built a business around giving you different ways to find your ideal client. They've built really specific tools that most people wouldn't know about, but for marketers, it's created this really powerful tool set. And not everybody knows how to use it. It can be complex. Whereas what you're talking about aligns with their strategy, which is, well, don't, you know, randomly do it based upon people's interests. Be in the same group as their interest, which is why the future, like what you're saying, is really interesting, that everyone needs to have not just, you know, digital assets to try to attract people, but the live events are really interesting and the groups are really interesting, because it's like, I know you're interested in this thing. I'm the authority because I organize this group, and I can put all my resources into bringing more people in the group that match this, you know, this philosophy or interest or ideal client profile.
Well, and they're tied to some commonality, right? And so that could be a sport. It could be our alumni network. It could be, you know, I live in a military town, so it could be, you know, military related, the military moms of Virginia Beach, right? I mean, it's figuring that out, and then figuring out if you have a tool, service, product, whatever that those people are looking for, then you sell to that. And I think all too often people are, well, they're trying to figure out who to sell to, and then they never speak to the brand. And so like the XFL, the new football league that has come back, right?
Should go away again.
I don't think it's going away.
You know, I don't think it is either, but it's like.
But so here's the thing, right? You might not be there. And this is exactly what where I think people mess up is it's not for you.
It's right.
And they don't care.
They don't care.
And they don't care. But so often people are trying to sway you to like them instead of just saying, well, who likes us and what can we do to reinforce and give them the best product possible?
So it's interesting. If I think of, you know, you've got the NFL, you've got college football, and then you know, you've got the XFL. How does the XFL, A, find that audience and make it financially successful? Like, where do you think that is different from, say, 10 or 15 years ago, or whenever it was out last? How long ago was it? Was it 10, 20 years ago?
2001.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So there's a lot of case studies and interviews and stuff about the old XFL. I actually just did a video on it myself on the rebrand. And what's interesting is a lot of people believe that McMahon just tried making wrestling. Vince McMahon is the guy who started the XFL. Right. He also is the guy who is the man behind the WWE. And so a lot of people think that he was just trying to create these live events that were wrestling-like that happened to play football.
Right.
And it was never the idea to actually be this real league. And so now he's actually put an operator in place, an Oliver Luck, who's many know as one of the great operas, one of the great sports operators in the world. And they have really gotten in front of it and saying, hey, look, we've learned our lesson from before. We're taking things slow. This is a new football brand. We have the bankroll, right? He's put $1 billion or $500 million into it.
Wow.
Right? And so we're going to build it up slowly. So they're their own startup, but they've done a handful of things while bringing in the big gun guy in Oliver Luck, taking it slow, getting out in front of it and saying, hey, we're not the NFL. That's their vernacular. They've addressed the past and a handful of other things. And I think they're going to take things slowly. But they also have huge elite partnerships, which most organizations can't have too, in ESPN and Fox. And I read an article that said that like 75 or 80% of ad buys for the league had already been bought.
Wow. So their ads, they've already sold on those networks.
They've already sold on the networks. The stadiums are getting 17,000 to 24,000 fans a game.
That's nothing
which
wrong.
Which is more than any other league has ever done.
Yeah.
Other league has ever been able to do. And so I believe that Vince McMahon is one of the greatest, if not greatest, ever promoters of all time.
Probably, yeah.
Right? Anyone that can take, you know, wrestling and turn it into a multi-billion-dollar juggernaut, I think you have to respect that. And so if he can take any of that, dissect it, and turn it into America's favorite sport, I think there's an opportunity there. So
like, do you think it's, listen, there were always fans for this, but it wasn't the NFL fan, or it wasn't the size of the NFL, but that doesn't mean it's not viable. And now there's new channels to monetize this. So it's like, this could be on YouTube. It could be on ESPN or Fox. They need programming.
And there's all that. There's all that. And then there's the whole streaming aspect of it too, which his his baby in WWE has figured out very well.
Oh, right? Really? I mean, okay.
Well, the WWE Network has 2 million active subscribers at $10 a month.
Oh, shoot. Really?
Right. So, I mean, they haven't even talked about capitalizing on that yet.
$2 for your football or $1 for your football.
Or just having other access a month, still having it on the other stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that this was a great opportunity for him to get back into. I think because of the decline, you know, in parentheses, in quotation marks, of the NFL, I think it's just a good opportunity. And I don't think they're really trying to compete. I think they're just trying to, they're trying to own their own narrative. They're trying to build their own narrative. And I think it's something that a lot of businesses should look at and say, hey, this is who we are. And this is who we're not, and stick in those lanes instead of just being like, oh, we're trying to be the NFL. I think they're very much been saying, hey, we're not this other thing. And most brands are saying, in even in the football world, have said, oh, we're going to be the next, we're loosely affiliated with the NFL. We're trying to be the NFL, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I mean, imagine if an NHL came out, new NHL, right?
Yeah.
You can't do that, right?
It's tough.
It has to be this organic thing, and it comes back. It comes back to the book that I wrote, Anomaly. How to find,
well, and that's, which is, I think it totally does, because I think that's your point, which is, you know, maybe 20 years ago it was tough to have that. It was kind of like the Peter Thiel model of create your own monopoly, right?
Yeah.
Which is not like a monopoly on an industry; it's your own thing, and it's your own customer or fan.
But I mean, in 01, I mean, what did you have access to in 01?
Nothing.
I'm still using AOL internet.
Right. Messenger. Like instant messenger.
AOL instant messenger. I'm trying to find girls being like ASL.
I don't know about that, but it's funny. I never used that, but I did the deals.
I didn't. I used AOL instant messenger. I never got a girl that way. But yeah. I mean, think about that. Like, tools have changed, and most people don't even realize, and I think you even kind of, just from your facial expression, you didn't realize they had 2 million active subscribers on their OTT.
Yeah, I don't really track them, but that's great,
huge,
right? That's like, you know, a $240 million a year business, right?
Just that alone. And then they have all this other stuff that makes money too.
Right, because it just parlays into the rest of their merchandise story.
Merchandise, live events, pay-per-views.
Mm-hmm. They still have pay-per-views.
So pay-per-views are tied into the network, but I believe they still sell pay-per-views for people who don't have the network.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
I don't know how that works, but I mean, I study a lot of media companies because I think it's interesting. How do you gain that attention, and how frequent is too frequent to market to something? Right.
Well, that goes back to my other question before, right? Which is like, well, how, you know, am I not producing enough? I feel like I'm producing too much. Like, am I saying, you know, what's the balance, or is there a balance? You just go full throttle and.
Yeah. I mean, currently, like, I'm testing, is there too much to produce content standpoint? Right. And so I've produced thousands of pieces of content over the years, and I'm like, I want to push out way more content than I normally do. And so for the next 60 days or so, I'm a few days into this current study, if you will, I'm going to see what's going to happen and say, oh, well, maybe I should be posting more. Maybe I should be posting less. Mm-hmm. Right. And just see what happens. And so I think most people, number one, they don't post a lot of content because they're afraid of what happens, right? Oh,
probably.
What if no one sees it?
Well, am I talking to myself?
Whatever.
Number two is what
should I talk about?
Right.
You should probably talk more about the same thing over and over again, different ways,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I talk all the time about my book, but I rarely use the word anomaly. Right. Mm-hmm. But I can use case studies and things that I've done, other people have done. And so that's interesting. And so I think there's a ton of content that people can push out about what they're working on. That's in a non kind of DB kind of way, a non kind of like, hey, just like stroke my ego type of way.
Yep.
And I think most people don't know who you are, and they would be interested if you actually would open the door and say, hey, I'm open for business.
So you're going on this 60-day experiment to see if you produce as much as you humanly can, what impact that has.
You can loosely say that. I mean, I don't know, a lot of the content's already been produced. I'm just repurposing it more on a more frequent basis.
So how many types and what channels are you looking at?
So right now, I would say before I would post on LinkedIn, let's say 3 to 4 times a week. I'm now doing 3 times a day.
You are, okay.
And that will be a mixture of video, copy only, and then copy plus image.
Okay.
Facebook will be 3 times a day, all kind of around that same strategy. Facebook group will be once a day. And then this is just me posting, not engaging in any kind of way either, right? I think you should be doing that kind of stuff anyway. Twitter, I think 7 to 10 times a day.
Wow, really? Okay.
And then Instagram, I can't recall if I'm doing 1 or 3 posts a day with then a bunch of stories a day, 1 YouTube a week. Like a longer form. So like the video I just posted was like the rebrand of the XFL. That's why I'm like kind of hot on this.
Yeah.
So I guess it's maybe what, like 80 to 100 pieces of content a week.
Okay.
Around a lot of the stuff that I've already created.
Right. So it's like you're repurposing. There's a content multiplier. It's kind of a little bit of Gary V model where it's like, it's one topic image repurposed for the platform.
So the reason
you're not spending your whole day producing content is the key.
Oh, right. No, a little bit of time. The YouTube video is the hardest thing.
Okay.
Because I will be editing that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So this is something that I haven't heard a lot about ever. And I recognized it when I wrote my book. I was interviewing this guy named Ryan Williams, who I think actually lives in your area. He wrote a book called The Influencer Economy, maybe. And he said that he was about to interview Seth Godin. And while he was doing his research, Seth Godin is known as one of the top 10 marketers in the world. And he said that he was interviewing, or he was researching Seth Godin. He was looking at all of his interviews and he was answering the same question over and over again, the same exact same way. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And so I really started thinking, who else is doing this? Musicians. So if you go see Taylor Swift tonight, you know, in LA, and then go see Taylor Swift tomorrow in Miami, she's playing the exact same set. Comedians are playing the same thing here in Virginia Beach that they are in Washington, D.C. tomorrow. Right. And so what is that telling me? That's telling me that the content, the show, the performance is the constant. Right. And the audience is the variable, where I think most people are flip-flopping that. So they're constantly creating new content over and over and over again.
Oh, man. Okay.
And they're actually changing the audience over and over again, too. So they're double building instead of actually saying, let's talk about basically the same thing over and over again, which is the constant. And the variable is the audience, which is changing over and over again. And if you really think about it, the audience, even if the audience isn't changing all over and over again, the audience isn't always seeing the thing that you're posting over and over again. And so the concept still works.
So we're probably underestimating the amount of reach we're actually getting with 1 or 10 or however many posts on one topic. And and the mistake you're saying is stop shifting, keep producing the same thing and get that message out, because it's not really reaching the way you think.
Well, I don't know about you, but I get messages from people who have never engaged, never liked, never commented, never shared, never done anything on my content before. I'll see them in person, they'll direct message me, they'll email me, and they'll ask me a question about something. I'm like,
right.
Why don't you engage on this?
Interesting.
And so we've determined that the way to understand if something is successful or not is by one of those three things, a like, a share, or an engagement.
Right.
Where I get why those things tell us data, but is it really the data that it's telling us? I think there's more to that story.
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion. So I'm interested in your experiment, if you will. And actually, I'm really tempted to match you on it.
I started it a few days ago and I was like, hold on. We need to also do this as a case study. So right. I need to make sure that like I actually capture all the things that I'm doing.
Yeah.
Too. I'm not just like, wow. And so far, like,
what's your main story theme in that?
Being like, what type of content am I pushing? Like a theme around that?
Like, is there a central theme or a couple central themes?
Probably still around like the anomaly theme, which is
right.
You know, always okay. on brand. So it's like be you, right? Just you. Like be your authentic you. Yep. And then telling the story through your experience, through other companies that might have been able to do something like that. And so it'll be interesting to see.
Okay. So what you need out of it, or what you get out of this in the end, is no matter what, you have a case study, and potentially you're hoping that this is a breakthrough because you've shown that if you produce this volume, it doesn't annoy people. It actually brings people in. And you have new contacts, new customers.
So I'm of the opinion that I don't care how much engagement I get.
Okay.
Because of the thing that we just talked about, where right. it's just because you don't see it doesn't mean that it's not happening, doesn't mean that I'm not playing the long game and that there's a lot of value in those things anyway.
Right.
I believe that if I do a good job of doing what I'm supposed to do, all those other things, the new business will ultimately happen because I can talk to that story. I'm vocalizing that story. I can share it with clients. And then, yeah, like if the case study is great or if it's bad, then I can be like, hey, look. But I do believe that we are our own media companies in person, online, and wherever else in the world. And so being able to articulate that type of content is valuable. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens. It'd also be interesting is if all of them go up, if all of them go down, if one of them goes up and one of them, like it'll be interesting to see kind of from that standpoint too, like what, like does one platform like me more?
Mm-hmm.
Does one platform like me less? Like that'll be interesting. I don't know. I mean, stay tuned.
Okay. I'm really tempted to participate in this.
I will tell you, I'm seeing if I have written down the actual numbers. Okay. So 60 days of content. LinkedIn, like I said, 3 times a day, 21 times a week. Facebook page. So, and all my stuff is at Zach Miller Says. So Zack Miller Says is all my channels. I believe that when you market yourself to one handle, it's a lot easier to
sure
realize that.
Totally.
The Facebook group, that's like my anomaly book group. And then Instagram, I think it's 3 on the 1 and then like a handful of stories. And then Twitter is, I think, like 7 to 10. So it'll be interesting to see what happens if it's higher, lower.
Yeah, you're gonna find out. I mean, I think it's a totally worthwhile experiment. It's probably, if you're organized, you can. I mean, I feel like I could pump out a ton more content. I don't know why I hold back. I think it's like, well, what's the point? Am I just feeding the machine, or is it my machine I'm feeding?
It also will be interesting. Like, I've built up this network for over a decade,
right,
in this business career. And have I been missing opportunities by not communicating with these people more, right? And so like that's an interesting like asterisk on it too, where it's like, what about this person that you met in 2012?
Mm-hmm.
That sees 4 of your posts? What would happen if they see 48 of your posts in the next 6 days? It's all interesting. Stay tuned.
But if you want, if you're interested in this, let me know. I'd be interested in doing like a once every other week or once a week check-in with you if you want.
Yeah, I should call. I need to brand this something. So like Zach Miller Says 60 days.
Zach Miller 60. Hashtag Zach.
But honestly, I also don't want to tell people that, like, I don't want to vocalize, hey, I'm doing this case study, right? Like, I want it to, what's it called? Like, the control group.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want people to know, like, oh, I'm doing this thing, blah, blah, blah. Like, I just want to naturally do it then go back. And then I'm not saying that, don't check in on me. Like, that's fine. But like, I didn't like a week ago be like, oh, I'm starting this thing
where I'm going to post the wizard behind the curtain.
Please, the Wizard of Oz. Like, that's great. No, but like, I think like people could be like, oh, like, I'm trying this new study. Let's see what happens. And I've told the whole world, engage with me.
Yeah. You might screw up the response to it.
Yeah.
Or you might bring more attention to it.
But I feel like that would be like a misguided thing, but maybe, we'll see.
Maybe. Or it could be like, listen, I'm putting out this content. Let me know if you like it.
It will be interesting too. Like, when do people start being like, yo, you're pushing, like, it's only been a few days, but like, when are people like, yo, dude, you're pushing too much. Because like I used to email a lot. Right. I used to email 3 to 7 days a week.
You did? Okay.
And yeah, people,
it's like probably my, I'm like under.
Well, how much content do you have? Like, I feel like a lot of people have a lot of content and they don't use it.
I'm about a lot of content. Like, let's say I went full bore, right? I've written the book Automate and Grow.
You could just steal stuff off of that.
Because in the way I question in my head, maybe it's just, you know, self-deprecating, but I'm like, nobody's read this, but it's not true. But if you look at the way Automate and Grow is formatted, it says build digital products. By the way, here's a methodology to do that. Automate marketing, sales, and support. And here's how you build your plan, which is your traffic and conversion, your sales playbook, mm-hmm. customer success roadmap. Each of those categories of topics are like endless. You can go in there, right? It's like, here's the questions you ask. Like, that's content for days.
Well, how much do you sell the book for?
The book is like 10 bucks.
Yeah. So it's not there are people out there that sell these books that are a legit money generator.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Not that this doesn't generate money, but like I'm talking about people who sell like $250 books.
For sure. Oh, there are. Really? That's interesting. Jesus.
I've seen them. Well, I mean, you go to school, you buy a $200 textbook, which is an outdated thing, which is
textbook cartel. Yeah.
We're not getting into that school rant again today. That'll be like 7 hours worth of content there. But I mean, I literally just talk about the things in this over and over and over again. Some of them are like the legit topics, or they're just like concepts that are off of a different company. But I mean, like, you have the material, I would start spitting out a lot more. And it's finding a way to get it out there a little bit. I'm not spending all day on this stuff. I mean, like, I would say like it's like something comes to my mind and I throw it into a scheduler.
Makes sense.
And also that's another thing too, is like you have to be mindful of the scheduler.
Yeah.
Right. So like some schedulers don't post as natively. Other stuff.
That's a good question, because and that's a technical one, but like for example, I use Loomly mm-hmm. to schedule stuff out. And I wonder, because I look at my posts on LinkedIn, I'm like, I don't know if I get the reach.
Okay, so here's a great example. So I had uploaded, I'm using Facebook directly for schedule.
Okay.
I'm using Buffer right now. So Buffer for Twitter seems fine.
Okay.
Buffer for Instagram, I guess it puts it in there and then I have to tell it it's okay at the time, which is weird. And I haven't decided if I like that yet. Now on LinkedIn, for pictures and copy only, it seems to be fine. When I add a video, it then goes and shows video.buffer, which right. I don't like. So then I'll take that concept and I'll give myself like a notification that says, go and post this thing to LinkedIn so that it's natively. So I have the video already downloaded and ready. I have the copy ready. And then I go in. And so like yesterday, it was like 11:37 and I had this video that I recorded. So I used to host this TV show on ABC. And so I had this video, this 5-minute video with this guy named Douglas Burdett, who has this thing called the Marketing Book Podcast. And I didn't realize it at first, but it uploaded and I didn't love the way that it looked. And I was like, So I deleted it. And then I took the exact same thing and then uploaded it with the video and copy. And so now when I do LinkedIn videos, I will directly and natively upload it. And I think that's where people mess up, is they don't do things the way the platform wants them to.
Right.
That's easy. I'm not getting the exposure.
That might answer, right? It's like if I'm posting content and it masks my URL with a Loomly URL and then LinkedIn wants to remask it, it's probably ranking me back.
Maybe.
Interesting. So, well, listen, I could talk to you all day long, but I want to be respectful of your time. Let's check in for sure. I want to stay up to date, and I'm going to take this as the Zach Miller challenge.
The Zach Miller challenge.
And we're going to find out, like, if I'm posting 3 times a day and you're posting 3 times a day, what's the effect? That's really what we want to see out of this, right?
Yeah. And I mean, look, even if it's just helping one person, I guess it's valuable, right?
True. Good point.
That's the key, right? Is because that's what the content's for, right? It's to help people out.
True.
It helps the people, then good things are there.
All right. I'm going to accept this as a Zach Miller challenge, even though you didn't really make it the Zach Miller challenge. It is now. I may have branded it.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. We will update you on how it's going. You probably know how it's going because you'll tell us whether you're seeing this stuff or not. Zach, I'm going to wrap with two questions. One, how are you, Zach Miller, changing the world?
I'm posting three times a day on LinkedIn right now. I know, but look, I recognize that the most important thing is that I be myself and that I am authentic to that. And I share that with people and that I want people to be themselves too. And the quick and easy way that I can say that is no matter the opportunity, I am very much myself. And so I wear jeans and a black t-shirt every day. This one actually has a logo on it, but like people are like, why do you do that? I'm like, because I'm me. And that gives other people an opportunity to realize that, hey, like I don't have to be like someone else too, just because the man said I had to be. And so being true to yourself, I think in 2020 and beyond is very valuable and important.
Beautiful. Zach, thank you for your time. I really appreciate you being on. Last thing I'll wrap up with is when we have interesting guests on the Automate and Grow podcast, we'd like you to nominate other interesting guests. So who would you, Zach Miller, like to nominate as a featured guest of Automate and Grow?
Well, I'm in the Array Digital office, so let's nominate Eric Olson, who is the founder here.
Eric Olson.
And he'll be mad at you because, or he'll be mad at me because I didn't say his name right. His name is Eric J. Olson.
Oh, sorry. We will get the J in there. I'm Michael J. Devolano. You are Eric J. Olson.
He's Eric J. Olson. I'm Zach Miller.
Which middle initial?
Zach Miller is fine.
No. Zach, thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate it. This has been another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. We will see you on a future episode, hopefully with Eric J. Olson of Automate and Grow.